You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, it's the Fantastic Voyage. I guess we're still the Fantastic Voyage here in year two. The Fantastic Voyage, year duh. I'm the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, my first mate, Chris Johnson. What's up, Chris? How you doing?
I'm doing well, MJ. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Some good things happening. But first, you are headed up to Northern California, I understand. What's going on with that, man? What's happening?
Oh, man, just blessed with the opportunity to go up to the state capitol. Flying up after we record this, there's a ceremony that they're going to do on the floor of the state capitol that honors the UCLA 95 championship team and one of the guys that is going to go up there and represent the squad. So, just thankful and looking forward to it.
In front of the whole body of politicians and everybody and all that good stuff.
So both sides.
You have on a nice suit and tie, I suppose, and look really, really...
Yeah, unfortunately, I got to throw on a doggone tie.
Really spiffy.
That's the
good
part of it I don't like. We got to wear a tie, but yeah. I have one. I'm gonna be nice. Don't worry.
But yeah, that 95 team, man, that was the Yeah Baby year. That was the year that I was doing broadcast for UCLA, and Tyus Edney made the shot against Missouri that got you guys into the Final Four.
Elite Eight.
Into the Elite Eight. So that was. And then who'd you beat the next game?
UConn.
Ray. Oh, yeah. That was like that high scoring affair at Oakland Coliseum.
We had 108 that game.
I did the Yeah Baby thing. And then, Chris, I always regret because Jack Nicholson was at that game at the Oakland Coliseum. And we were back in the bowels of the Oakland Coliseum together. And I was talking to Jack, and I had one of my Yeah Baby hats. Yeah, baby, caps in my bag, and I just couldn't bring myself to ask Jack. He had on a UCLA cap, and I was so close, man. I was this close to asking Jack to wear that Yeah Baby hat so that he would be on TV when they flashed to Jack. He'd have on that Yeah Baby cap.
But yes, I gave Ed O'Bannon one of your shirts, like you asked me to do, like you basically made me do.
Yeah, forced you to do.
Because I didn't want to do it. And yeah, I was like, come on.
Navy blue with gold writing, yeah, baby, t-shirt. I was like,
come on, MJ. Like, I'm not trying to, interrupt our ceremony with Ed giving the president a Yeah Baby shirt. But anyway, right. I gave it to Ed. Ed walks up without asking one question and gives the shirt to President Bill Clinton. President Clinton holds it up. Marcus Johnson, patented Yeah Baby t-shirt is on international stage.
Marcus Johnson's Yeah Baby, and
did I tell you what he said to me when I talked to him? So listen, so since we're talking about the Bucks, I came in there with a pre-planned thing, and you had talked about it. You're like, mention Sidney Moncrief because the Arkansas thing.
Right.
So I came in there with the pre-planned Sidney Moncrief Arkansas line. Hey, President Clinton, Chris Johnson, my dad played with somebody you know, Sidney Moncrief. Who's your dad? Marcus Johnson. Oh, I know your dad. So I had a whole conversation with President Clinton during that little brief moment of our handshake when I go up there, but it was about Sidney. He was talking about, your dad was a heck of a player, just gave me all that. It was a highlight of my life.
Well, a couple of iconic photos, and, was President Clinton holding up the Yeah Baby t-shirt,
that was
in
dope.
The White House during the ceremony.
And we got it.
Then also you standing right behind him with your hand, draped over his shoulder. that was on the front page of the LA Times.
I was like this.
In the Herald. you had President Clinton. No. So, America's first black president, as a lot of people say. He came on Arsenio playing a saxophone. And with some dark shades,
with the Ray-Bans
and the saxophone. And
that's when he didn't inhale. He was talking about how he didn't inhale on Arsenio.
Oh man, that was.
That's when he said he didn't inhale.
He was the livest dude. And Sidney Moncrief spoke so highly of him when he was governor of Arkansas. When Sidney was at Arkansas, and so they had a great relationship. So that was something else, man. But and so my Yeah Baby call. I've had people come up to me years after the fact saying, "Well, you stole your play-by-play guy's thunder, Chris Roberts, by letting off some spontaneous emotion when Tyus Etney, my cousin, who I found out at a family reunion heading into his freshman year, we were related, makes that shot. And my thing, Chris, is this. Look, spontaneity, man, trumps all that other stuff. And then technically, the play-by-play person's job ends when the play ends, right? Tyus makes the layup. It's my turn. And so I just jumped and said what I said. But they want to be in the highlights and hear their voices in the highlights. And they want to extrapolate a bit more and all that, man. So
last thing on this, I get where they're coming from. Because if you watch One Shining Moment, you can hear like Ian Eagle and all these guys with like these pre-planned calls, right? Because they want that clean, crisp. Pre-planned. Oh, he did blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like you want to get that clean audio. So I understand what they were doing.
Yeah, well, I
understand
what they're... And when Florida beat Houston, there was a line that the play-by-play guy used that I know
that's what
that
I'm talking
he had,
about.
He had rehearsed and worked on and broke that out.
It.
And final point. But Gus Johnson used to get so mad at me, man, because we worked together here with the Bucks. When I first started out like 10 years ago, and Gus is one of the all-time greats, but I would always get excited, you know, when Giannis would come down the middle, Giannis goes up for a slam dunk, I'd be, oh, Gus, ow, Giannis with a jam, ow! And finally Gus pulled me to the side, like, look, man, this is how I make my money, man, on these highlight reels, man, so if you could just allow me to finish off my, you know, I'm like,
What's the term? The term is like, he wants you to lay out. Is that the term? Like,
lay out until I get, you know. And my thing is always, well, look, technically, play by play ends when the play ends, right? So if the Bucks come down and Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr. come up with a steal, here comes Kevin Porter Jr. takes it down the middle, slam dunk. Now it's my turn. Oh, Gary, didn't you see how he? You know what I mean? Oh, George. Oh, somebody, didn't you see what he? But, you know, anyway, I digress. But so that's the other thing. I want to give a quick shout out to Doc Rivers. And he really came to bat for me about being excluded from the Hall of Fame. Doc did. And Doc was on the committee a couple of years ago. And when I didn't make it, the second time I was a finalist. But this last time, he really came to bat and said he couldn't understand it. And talked about what, you know, I had done here in Milwaukee, what Sidney Moncrief and I had accomplished and how tough we were. And he played against me and he knows that I was a Hall of Fame caliber player, which leads me to this, Chris. I was doing the speakers deal for a Little League baseball banquet that Cyrus played in, Ladera Little League. Coco Chris came out of that Little League, a lot of major leaguers. And so I was introduced as a Hall of Famer. This is 13, 14 years ago. And so I was not even nominated
at
that time.
You were a Hall of Famer at that time. College Basketball Hall of Famer.
Well, we'll see. And here's my point, Chris. The fact that you are in a Hall of Fame, does that make you a Hall of Famer?
All day.
Because this guy, Kevin Reese, who's a good friend of mine, his son, Kyle, Kevin, the great photographer in L.A., Dodgers, Lakers, everybody, he came up to me and said, well, the guy who introduced you misspoke because you're not in the Hall of Fame, you know, one of those type dudes. And I was like, well, I'm in the UCLA Hall of Fame. Yeah, I think that was at the time. But I was thinking today, so I'm in the Los Angeles City Hall of Fame, UCLA Hall of Fame, Crenshaw High School Hall of Fame, Southern California
Wisconsin.
Basketball Hall of Fame, California
Wisconsin.
Hall of Fame, Wisconsin Hall of Fame, College Basketball Hall of Fame. I checked 7 of the 8 boxes. Chris, you are in the Southern California Basketball Hall of Fame. So, brother, we are a couple of Hall of Famers here in our own right, you know. And then it got me to thinking, too. And maybe Amonis, you know, I don't know, this is a stat you can't check out, Amonis, our producer, but, I mean, how many people that play sports ever get to any kind of Hall of Fame? You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
high school, city, college, whatever. I mean, you know, of all the people that play sports and
they talk about you're in the top whatever percent, 2% if you make the sports, you know, if you play sports, if you make a team. So imagine now what percentage that is, how rare it is for a guy that actually was 1% of 1% and then makes the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's crazy.
And makes the Hall of Fame, you know, and guys and ladies that distinguishes themselves enough throughout their career, high school, college, whatever it is, that they become Hall of Famers. And so I would imagine that number is 1% or lower, or I have no idea, but all the sports participants in the history of sports. How many make a Hall of Fame? So you're a Hall of Famer, brother. I'm a Hall of Famer. You know, of course, I want to get into the, you know, the big time Naismith. But at the same time, I look at, you know, the 7 of 8 Hall of Fames that I'm included in. I'm a Hall of Famer, man. So I feel good about that.
Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah. So anyway, had a good time watching the Bucks the other night.
As a fan?
We televised the game on FanDuel.
You weren't on.
Our FanDuel. So I was not working that night. Steve Novak was working. We played the Timberwolves. Steve Novak was working with Lisa Byington. Great duo, great team.
And, absolutely.
I wanted to watch it at home. I live across the street from the arena. I just kind of wanted to chill out. I had some pizza and some salad. I just wanted to chill out, watch the game. And so I had to get the sign-in information from one of our producers for FanDuel. And for the life of me, Chris, I could not sign in. I don't know. I did FanDuel Plus. I was on the screen counting the little stars of the password. It's 15 stars. I've got 15, and double check it. I tried, Chris, no less than 12 times, whatever.
Yeah, we've been through this with you before. Okay, we know what's going on.
Well, okay? I don't know. So finally, I just gave up on it. So I'm following the score on the NBA app and see that the T-Wolves are up 10, 12 points. It's around close to halftime. I was like, well, let me go over here and watch this game. So I threw on some clothes and walked across the street and kind of stood in the back with Milt Newton, our assistant general manager, and we were watching the game. We got down, man. We were down 90-70 at one point. I mean, so I'm watching this like – I'm like –
Well, 95, I, right? Wasn't it 24?
Up 24 at one point, to 95 to 71. Yeah, and so I'm watching the game, Chris, and I'm sitting there like kind of like, I left the comforts of my cozy apartment for this crap? For this shiznit? You know, I didn't say that, but that was kind of the vibe that I was, you know, emanating. And so finally, it was 90-70 going into the fourth quarter. I was like, well, let me go back here in this little lounge area where they have the post-game meal. They got nice couches set up and a huge screen TV.
Yeah, your leisure. Leisure activities.
Yeah. Who's but the screen? So I sat back there with Dan Smizek. How do you say his last name? Monas. Smizek. Dan Smizek, who I love. Been working with him for 10, 11 years. One of my favorite people. Dan Smizek. So me and Dan are watching, and it's a 20-point deficit. All of a sudden, the Bucks start creeping back in. And, man, that energy, man, in the building and with the team – and all that, man, just it was exciting. It was a major, I think a seminal moment, possibly, for this team.
Question, when's the last time you felt that type of energy in Fiserv? When is the last time you felt that type of energy?
It happens. And here's, you know, inconsistency versus resiliency. We get down by big numbers all the time, Chris. We've been down 15, 20, double digit. I mean, it's just this team, this whole season has been one that's been down double figures a lot. And so inconsistency versus resiliency, sometimes they found a way to dig themselves out of the hole, come back and win. Sometimes they don't. But so it's happened before, but the fans are always there and juiced and getting us going. And then the other thing that happened that I was so excited about, which is really why I wanted to come over, because I wanted to see Bobby Portis after a 25-game absence because of the banned substance that they tested positive for. So I wanted to see just kind of, you know, and when you stand back there in the area I was standing back, right where the Bucks kind of come out of the locker room, a little area where they got the warm-up bicycles and the stationary bikes and all that, the heating pads and all that stuff. There's just a lot of activity going on back there. Melanie Ricks is back there and a lot of stuff going back there. So I'm standing back there with Milt Newton. And so I could see Bobby's whole vibe and energy and Giannis's vibe and the interplay on the court. It's a great, great angle to watch a basketball game. But, you know, I'm 69 years old and I got tired after about 15, 20 minutes. I said, well, let me go sit down and watch the rest of this game in the back. We're down 20. You know, but they start coming back. And to your point, I mean, the crowd got into it, but Bobby played a great game, 18-10, which I knew he would. He was out for almost 2 weeks with personal reasons. His grandmother had died, and he was away from the team, not even working out with the team at that point. So I was concerned about his condition. He came back his first game with 23 and 17 rebounds. So I knew, you know, he's been with the team for this past month on the road. They were, you know, you look at the itinerary, you know, the practices at 10 a.m. at 8:30. Bobby's got to play group with, you know, a bunch of two-way guys, Tyler Smith and then G League guys. But they got play groups that they're going to play and get Bobby some full court burn. So came back last night, Chris, 18 and 10. But gave him toughness, mm-hmm. gave him all that good stuff that we've been missing. And so when I say seminal moment, I feel good about where we are. Now, we've been inconsistent. We had a 4 or 5 game losing streak. We're on a 5 game winning streak right now. The teams that we have beaten, New Orleans shorthanded without a bunch of starting players, Philadelphia, obviously, Miami, I mean, no Tyler Hero, you know. Games were supposed to win, but that game last night, Chris, that game the other night against the Minnesota Timberwolves, that game against the Timberwolves, this team showed me something, man, because the T-Wolves are playing for Western Conference positioning also. There's about, I mean, I looked a couple of days ago, there were about four or five teams with 44 wins or 45 wins or something, so it's all log jammed up over there too. And so they're playing for something. But, man, to go out there, man, with the focus, and Bobby Portis talked about it, just kind of, we had to get focused, you know. And so that's the one thing. And the other point is there's a lineup that Doc is using, Chris, to close out games. I want your take on this. But he plays this small ball lineup with A.J. Green, Gary Bird,
Gary Trent
Jr., and Gary Trent Jr. Then throws in Giannis or Kuzma. That last night it was Giannis and Bobby Portis that played the bulk of the minutes. But those threesome, A.J., Trent Jr., and Porter Jr., they, to me, are the best defensive threesome for perimeter defensive purposes. And Doc went to a zone at that time. It was an active zone, and that's when Kevin Porter Jr. had 4 of his 5 steals in that fourth quarter. But I don't know. I just think Doc has stumbled upon something that can benefit this team in the playoffs, especially with the first round series against the Pacers kind of looming, and as fast as they play and as much as they've got on the perimeter between Tyrese Haliburton and Benedict Mathurin and that and my guy from Gonzaga. What's that the light-skinned shooter's name with the who am I talking about? I'm drawing a blank. But he's one of my favorite guys. He used to come off the bench. I think now he's starting. But anyway, they've got some perimeter guys that have given us problems. And so I think we have found somewhat of a solution to that with the threesome that I just mentioned. And, Doc, they are the guys, Chris, that has gotten us back into major deficit-type games. We've been down big to teams that we shouldn't have been down big to. Doc has put them in, and, man, we've come back and closed it to make it a competitive game. So I like – kind of like where this is headed right now.
Well, all three of those guys, you know, on the court together, they give you switchability. They're long to a certain extent. And then there's the pace defensively that they're able to play with, meaning fighting through, getting around, not getting hung up on screens and living in the passing lane. Like, guys are up. So that has to do with the youth also. You know, three younger, I won't say GT's the young guy, but younger legs kind of guys on the perimeter. And you're right, Doc stumbled on it. It's been solid. I was trying to see that the net rating of this group on the floor. I don't know if Monis can look that up, but how do those three compare, in your opinion, MJ, to the 2021 championship closers?
Which would be, who are we talking about specifically?
Just like the three best guys. The three best guys defensively from 2021 on the perimeter.
PJ Tucker, you throw him in there. He's not a, not the typical. But yeah.
That's tough. I mean, but I'm just looking at how a core trio of perimeter guys that play a certain style of defense, how important that is for your defensive foundation, especially going to the playoffs. With things, whistles now are far and fewer between, physicality, you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Becomes a premium. Talk to me.
Well, So Andrew Nimhardt is the guy I was trying to think of from Gonzaga.
I didn't remember he went to Gonzaga. That's why it blew me. I forgot he went to freaking Gonzaga.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, he's.
I thought he was a flo-. I don't know why I forgot that. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
How old are you, Kyle? You're almost 50? Okay, well.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm getting old.
Welcome to the club, young fella. But no,
so Nimhardt. Balboa.
Or some Lions. Lion's mane, like your brother Josh has me drinking, whatever.
The lion's mane on point.
Okay, so Nimhardt and Halliburton, Mathurin, you're gonna need perimeter defenders. And to your point, I mean Drew, obviously, and I could throw Ryan Rollins in there too for us.
Throw him in there.
I could throw Ryan Rollins in there. We're gonna get Donovan Ham on the show at some point, maybe the next time we link up, because he is Darvin Ham's son, but he's an assistant coach with the Bucks. He's been the guy working with Ryan Rollins all season, and has really helped build his confidence. Chris, they shoot 250 jumpers after home games. They make 250 threes after home games. That's the kind of dedication. Last night they're out there getting up 250, making 250 threes, and so Donovan has done just a masterful job in terms of bringing him up to this point, getting his confidence up. But I'm throwing him in there because, you know, he's got a 6'11 wingspan. He's 6'4. Ryan Rollins, 6'11 wingspan, quick feet. He's really they want that, and I mentioned him because Drew Holiday is the name they keep mentioning in reference to him. In terms of that dog, now, and they're the first to admit that he'll, you know, he's not Drew. He's never going to be Drew. Drew's one of a kind. Drew's got that combination of strength and smarts and speed and quick feet that then makes him such a devastating perimeter defender. But they want him to have that same kind of mindset. And so I think it compares favorably, not only defensively, but I like this crew better at the offensive end. Because when you think about Drew and the playoffs, Drew Holiday struggled with his offense for the most part in 21, the championship year. Had some good games against Atlanta, made some great defensive plays, but I'm talking offensively.
Yeah.
But this crew, when I think of Gary Trent Jr.'s had some consecutive 20-plus point games, starting to shoot the ball, has shot the ball really well all season since that first month of the season. Been really consistent. I mean, Kevin Porter Jr.'s numbers, I don't have them in front of me, but he's over 40% from the three-point line. He's like almost 89% free throw shooter. I mean, somebody did a comparison, Chris, on Twitter between KPJ's stats since we acquired him in February near the trade deadline and Marjon Beauchamp, who I love. I love Marjon. This is not a slight on Marjon, but yeah, you know, Marjon got cut by the Clipper, way by the Clipper, signed with the Knicks, playing at all sporadically. And this has got to be one of the biggest steals, if I could say that, in a long time. It still baffles me why the Clippers would make a deal like this. And maybe there's a glut at that position. I'm not sure what was going on, you know, I mean, they gifted us with Kevin Porter Jr., right?
Absolutely. I mean, the way he's come in and played, I think it was the thing with the Clippers. Who knows what was happening off the court? Sometimes guys need a change of scenery, need a new crew around them, need new voices to really flourish and get in their bag. And then coming from L.A., moving to Milwaukee, I don't know if any of that had anything to do with it as far as lock-in. And being completely bought in, locked in to what you're doing. LA is live, man. So I don't know, but I'm not going to speculate. But I do know that it's probably one of the biggest steals in an NBA trade in a long time. Well,
yeah.
I mean, the Luka trade was a steal. So we can't just sit here and say,
was it really?
No Austin Reed. You don't include. So wait, you're telling me that you're only going to get AD for Luka? No Austin Reeves? No nothing?
No Dalton Connect, no nothing. But I mean,
come on. Let's be 100% honest. But listen, but I wanted to say something about Ryan Rollins. The other thing about Ryan Rollins, MJ, and like you were saying, the 6'11, but he's also like strong. He's got this level of strength on the perimeter that really stands out to me. I mean, it stands out. And when I see him guard and I see how he makes plays sometimes, stops momentum and just, you know, guys just can't get by. I'm like, dang, that dude is actually pretty strong. And but your point about the offensive end, man, it's a luxury to have guys going that hard defensively, that are that effective defensively, and that live on the offensive end as well. And in three kind of different ways, I think that, you know, that's a heck of a that trio, man, is going to get a lot of mileage out of Doc for Doc in the playoffs.
A lot of mileage in the playoffs, but and as I mentioned, their ability to score. And so when you hear conversation about Giannis, I just looked up some numbers here on Cleaning the Glass, Ben Falk's excellent site. On court, between those three guys, KPJ, Gary Trent II, and Derry Bird. So they're plus 16.1 differential, which is the 98th percentile, which is excellent. Offensively, their points per possession, 120.7, 87th percentile. 58.8 effective field goal percentage, 96th percentile. They take care of the basketball. Turnover percentage, they're in the 86th percentile. Don't offensive rebound, which you wouldn't expect. Free throw rate, they get to the free throw line, Chris. They're in the 99th percentile. 27.3 is a free throw. Now, let's look at their
playoffs.
So that's offense. That's offense. And those are all 90-plus percentile type numbers, except for the points per possession. That's 86, 87, close enough. So let's look at their defense. According to Cleaning the Glass, Ben Falk. Defensively, points per possession, 104.6, 98th percentile. Defensive effective field goal percentage, 49.8.
Dang.
98th percentile.
They're locking up.
And this is so the Bucks are one of the worst teams in the league at generating turnovers. One of the worst. I think they rank bottom five or something in the league in terms of forcing their opponents into turnovers. With this threesome on the floor, turnover percentage defensively, 15.7, 79th percentile. They do an outstanding job forcing turnovers. They do a great job rebounding the ball. They're only giving up 25% of their opponents' missed shots to their opponents. That's in the 90th percentile. And they don't foul. The Mike Budenholzer thing. They keep the Greg Popovich thing. They keep their opponents off the free throw line. Free throw rate, 82nd percentile. So, I mean.
So they're the key. They're the key to the Bucks playoff success, basically, is what you're telling me. They're the key.
So, yeah, that triumvirate, perimeter defensive triumvirate of Derry Bird, A.J. Green, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr. is, I think, going to be a big key for the playoffs. So we'll see how that plays out. And I'm just so impressed with what they, especially, we know offensively what they can do, the shooting and the point production. But, man, that defense has been locked down. So, and we're going to take a look at some of that stuff and more with the Fantastic Voyage here District. The captain is Vessel, Marcus Johnson, my son Chris Johnson. We'll be back right after this. All right, here District, the Fantastic Voyage, and man, Chris, we got to start with the place to start. The only place to start. You're talking about the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis, and what he has done. Man, he's three straight triple doubles. Second time he's done it in his career. Only time that it's been done in Milwaukee Bucks history, I believe. We'll double check that. But three straight games of triple doubles. He is the first player, Chris, in NBA history. Anytime you're doing something that puts you in that historical context in the pantheon of NBA greatness, you're doing something. First player in NBA history with plus 30 points and over 60% shooting for seven straight games. I mean, you know, so talk about just efficiency. And then, you know, we used to talk about his points in the paint and how compared to Shaq, and now we're starting to hear about, you know, and they kind of stopped with the early 90s when they started making those comparisons, but now they're venturing back into the time machine, and they're dusting off Wilt Chamberlain and some of his accomplishments and comparing those to Giannis in terms of point production and what he's doing around the basket. Man, this. And the other thing, Chris, and this is the biggest point, because we're gonna look at some video to support this as we get into our About That Action segment, one of my favorite segments where we've got video to support what we're talking about. Doc Rivers has been talking about what Giannis has been doing with these other guys, with his teammates. Empowerment. We're starting to hear that word, empowerment. What does that mean? I mean, Giannis is being a decoy sometimes. Giannis is getting off the ball early sometimes. Giannis is sacrificing himself, letting other guys make plays. Giannis doesn't have to make every single play.
So wait. Empowerment is just basically Giannis being unselfish.
Being unselfish, but not taking the whole responsibility upon himself to win ball games, which he does sometimes. He used to do.
But is the empowerment language, is that used to sort of, I don't want to say mentally kind of trick Giannis?
It's a backhanded compliment. Kind of, yes, it's a backhanded
compliment. Okay,
You're passing the ball.
Okay. Thank you.
You're getting off the ball, you know.
Thank you.
Getting off the ball.
Empowering others.
So we're going to take a look at about that action, some Giannis-specific plays that will exemplify empowerment. Pass the ball. Empowerment. So here's a great steal. Cat quickness of Scoot. Kevin Porter, and look at that left-handed dime, Chris. Run that one more time. Look at that. See, this is what I love about his passing, too. He can deliver it in the shooting pocket, right-handed, left-handed, across his body, normal passes. But this great defensive play, watch Scoot. Kevin Porter Jr., that's his nickname. I got to find out the genesis of that. All right, watch Kevin Porter Jr., a.k.a. Scoot. Scoot. That's his nickname, Chris. Scoot. I got to find out where Scoot comes from. The genesis of that, but watch how quickly he gets to the basketball. The anticipation gives it to Giannis early, and this is what I love about Giannis: his ability to hit shooters in the shooting pocket, right-handed or left-handed.
Giannis already knew where AJ was before he made that pass. That turn and to recognize where the shooter was that quickly. I mean, that's definitely an intuitive, instinctive kind of play. But there's also a part of me that says Giannis uses peripheral vision and saw where AJ was so that he made that quick turn and delivered a dime right in the shot pocket.
Now, here's an example of some empowering teammates. Giannis not going to bring it up to court himself, going to give it up early to Kevin Porter Jr. He draws the contact, gets himself to the free throw line, knocks down the free throws. You know, a month ago, 2 months ago, before KPJ, Giannis might have tried to take that himself, barreled it down the middle, and maybe something productive happens, maybe something doesn't. But, Chris, he's giving it up early. That's huge.
What that shows me is a developing trust in those guys. Instead of hero ball, instead of what you mentioned, locomotive coming down the middle of the lane, choo-choo, Giannis, no, I trust these guys to get something done in this scenario. And he might have been tired, MJ, so he's kind of like, you know, maybe he didn't feel like pitching it, but whatever it was, it's a great choice to empower others.
But that's a major point, because now you could conserve some energy. You don't have to make every play. You don't have to elude 3 and 4 and 5 defenders and try and Euro step your way around, you know, Naz Reid and Rudy Gobert to get to the, you know, trust your teammates. Trust.
And moving forward, like the more Giannis can trust his teammates and the less Giannis plays, the less of those type of plays where Giannis has to make when he's tired and barrels down the lane, offensive fouls, or comes in and kind of makes, you know, those plays when fatigue sort of sets in, you see Giannis kind of deviate from, the game plan, if you will. Now with this, think about it. Now you save 7 possessions of that, and now you get more efficient stuff. Other guys are involved, so they're going to want to play more defense on the other end. And it's just going to be a domino effect on both sides of the ball.
And I don't have, you know, empirical statistical evidence to support this, but this is the eye test. When Giannis gets tired, he turns the ball over more.
Facts.
I'll just leave it at that. When he gets tired, he's more turnover prone. So play 3. Let's take a look at Giannis. This last play here. And here, watch Scoot, though. Watch the defense of Kevin Porter Jr. Number 3. Watch this. He's going to anticipate right there. Give me the ball. Gets there quickly. Now, he loses it. Watch how he separates from DiVincenzo. And then drops a dime to Giannis. That was the play of the freaking game. We got to look at that again, the whole thing. First, it's that Scoot quickness. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, just KPJ, though, growing as a player, right? Poised, under control, you know, didn't lose it. And this is part of what I think what Doc talked about early in the season about KPJ and surrounding him with love and showing him love, like empowering this dude to be the best version of himself. I mean, yeah. I know it's, I mean, it's like right there, that play to not give up, to play through, to fight, to get it back. That shows me something about where KPJ's head is.
Yeah. And you saw how much he separated from Dante DiVincenzo at midcourt. That made the play, because now it's a 2-on-1 against that backline defender, hey. Conley. And that's a lob, yeah, all day, right, all the time. So, yeah. So great, yeah, play. And then.
Very nice.
Okay. And the other point, final point with KPJ, he got into that little bit of a skerfuffle, however you say it, that dust up with Rudy Gobert. And Kevin Porter Jr., Chris, said that his teammates came to him when he wanted to get in and mix it up and maybe get into something and say, we need you to finish this game off. We need you to win this basketball game.
Bro, when you feel like somebody's counting on you, okay, that helps, like, you grow up, if you will. It helps, yeah, accelerate your maturity curve.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you know that dudes are counting on you and they're like, hey, man, you can't be doing the same stuff you was doing. That's called growth.
We need
and I
you.
I love it. And it's the perfect time for this kind of stuff to be happening. We pointed out some really good. Hey, that's key, man. It's key to you. Be wanted.
We need you. We really need you. We need you. We need you to finish this game off for us. We need you. Don't do anything silly. We need you. No, I mean, it's great to be wanted. You know that, man. Anyway,
I
love it too. And I think, like you mentioned, it's a perfect time for all this, all this, you know, warm and fuzzy camaraderie. Bobby Portis back playing great. Hopefully, we get Dame back. But if we don't, we have to do what we got to do. Got to make do. But man, I'm so excited about the prospects right now, which I wasn't crazy about after we found out about Dame and the thrombosis and everything he was going through. But with Bobby back, looking in great shape and playing great, at least his first time out, man, I'm more optimistic about our chances. You know, we beat the Pacers 3 out of 4 games. The one game they did win, Tyrese Haliburton threw up that wild, crazy shot, 4-point play to beat us. But I like our chances, so we'll see what happens. But it's a great time to be an NBA fan, playoff basketball. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, this is Here District. This fantastic voyage will continue next week. We're out of here.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.